Living on Earth needs your support to be heard each week. Kindly give what you can today by using the donate link to the left of this page. Thanks.
Well, it's quite a ways from Barcelona to the ghost town of Gothic, Colorado, but both provide us with important data about the disrupting effects of global climate change on nature. Key to our understanding are historical records, which is why research scientists owe a debt of gratitude to a loner named Billy Barr, who kept meticulous notes about the weather and animals in remote Gothic, Colorado. Reporter Zachary Barr, no relation to Billy, has our story.
When Billy Barr first came to Colorado, he was an East Coast college student looking for, his words, a quiet space to get away from social pressures. So when he got to the ghost town of Gothic, high up in the Colorado Rockies, he knew he wanted to stay a while. He began the winter of 1974 in a tent. At this altitude, it snows 25 feet a year. Halfway through that first winter, the owner of an old mining shack saw how Billy was living and offered the shivering camper his abandoned cabin.
This is where the cabin used to be. It ran from here 8 feet this way and 10 feet that way.
That's Billy. The shack burned down several years ago, and so right now he's tracing its perimeter on the ground with a stick.
This is this little square here, and that was it. And I spent 8 years in that.
In an 8x10 cabin.
Yeah.
Inside the tiny shack, winters were long and frigid. Blowing snow was everywhere, including inside the cabin. On top of that, Billy could go weeks without seeing another human. So it's not surprising that he paid special attention to animals.
Like here, March 21, 1978, I saw a gray jay, a grosbeak, a raven, a nuthatch, and so on.
Billy kept incredibly detailed notebooks, jotting down every animal he saw, every day, all winter long. Then, when spring was near, new animals showed up.
Yeah, it was just interesting. It was like, oh, look, there's a nuthatch. I don't usually see a nuthatch in March. I'll make a note of it.
Why'd you do this?
I was living in an 8x10 foot shack with not a lot to do.
Now, that's the backstory. But you also need to know that Billy's shack is near the Rocky Mountain Biological Lab. It's a summer research station where Billy now works as the office manager. In addition to other things, the lab is a sort of worldwide headquarters for people researching marmots. In case you didn't know, Italian grad student Eleonora Ferrando explains.
Oh, a marmot is like a big rodent. They're not like big rats. They're nice, and they're really cute.
Today, Eleonora is helping tag marmot pups, who chirp this alarm call when they're temporarily caught inside a live trap. But despite studying the furry brown creatures for decades, researchers didn't know when marmots wake up each spring from hibernation. And that's something biologist David Inouye was interested in. And he, like Billy, spends a lot of time at the field station. Do you see where this is going? About 8 years ago, David found out about Billy's notebooks. Eureka.
Billy has data for chipmunks, he has data for ground squirrels, he has data for marmots. I think that's why it's unusual, the fact that there is this record for a long-term record for a small mammal emerging from hibernation. It's not something that many people have paid attention to in the past.
David took Billy's observations and compared it to temperature records. Over the past 30 years, average spring temperatures in Gothic have risen 2 degrees Fahrenheit. And over that same period of time, marmots are emerging from hibernation about 3 to 4 weeks earlier.
Used to be when marmots would come up through the snow in April, they'd stick their heads out, it was still cold, and they'd go back down and hibernate for a few more weeks. But now when they come out through the snow, it's relatively warm, they decide, oh, winter's over, even though they may have had to dig their way out of 6 feet of snow.
And that's what happened this year. Snow was everywhere, and so coyotes had a field day eating marmots. There's just nowhere to hide. Scientists aren't concerned about marmots going extinct, but some species are threatened, particularly those that live only at high elevations. And some animals, like bees, are being forced to higher ground.
There's at least one species of bumblebee that seems to occur about 2,000 feet higher in altitude now than it used to back in the 1970s, and others that seem to be disappearing, or at least to becoming very rare at lower altitudes.
Now, everything we've been talking about has a scientific name, phenology. That's the timing of the life cycle events of plants and animals, when flowers bloom, when birds migrate, or when marmots stop hibernating. And all over the world, there's increasing evidence that climate change is messing up phenology in nature. But if you're a scientist, you need hard data. So the push is on to find more people like Billy Barr.
Anybody can learn how to do the monitoring on a plant in their backyard, and they can enter their data online. then it becomes part of the national database to understand how climate change is affecting those plants across the United States.
That's Jake Weltzien. He's heading up the National Phenology Network. It's just launched a website where you can submit your own data. So far, one of the network's most impressive finds comes from Tucson, Arizona.
We were contacted by a citizen scientist named Dave Bertelson. And Dave, it turns out, had been hiking up the Catalina Mountains on a 5-mile trail for 20 years. Each Wednesday, he would track the plants that he saw that were in flower, and he would record that information.
Dave's notebook had 110,000 observations. But even if you have zero observations, you can start now, just by keeping an eye on whatever nature is in your daily life.
If you live in the Northeast, you can help us monitor sugar maple. If you live in Tucson, help us monitor saguaro. For some species, like dandelions that grow everywhere, we encourage people to actually help collect data on those.
And if that sounds interesting, there's one more volunteer job you should know about. They're going to need someone new in Gothic, Colorado soon. Billy Barr's moving. He's built a house an hour away and 2,000 feet lower down in Gunnison. He says he just can't stand the winters anymore. For Living on Earth, I'm Zachary Barr.
Coming up, methane from under the Arctic Sea and the choreography of the food chain along South Africa's wild coast. Our voyage continues. It's Living on Earth.
Support for the Environmental Health Desk at Living on Earth comes from the Cedar Tree Foundation. Support also comes from the Richard and Rhoda Goldman Fund for coverage of population and the environment, and from Gilman Ordway for coverage of conservation and environmental change. This is Living on Earth on PRI, Public Radio International.